Hey everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts podcast. We are well on our way to Woodhome Country Club. It is our next event on September 11th. And if you are not signed up for that event, you better get on the ball soon because it is going to be an absolute blast. I'm so excited for this club. It's our first dipping our toes into the great state of Maryland. And we are super excited to be lucky enough to have Woodhome be our club, our first club that, you know, for more One Club Short events. It's going to be a blast. We're hoping to see a whole bunch of new One Clubbers that are, you know, ready to rock in this new formatted event that we've got. The course is playing great. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from the course itself. It's playing phenomenal. I know a lot of folks that have been down there recently that just were lucky enough to play it just said it, this may be, I know I say this a lot, but this is going to be such a fun surprise for everybody because food is great, course is great, and it's such a cool little hidden gem. So, you know, if you haven't signed up yet, make sure you sign up. We're all about it. We're looking forward to meeting you all. With that being said, we're going to hop right into our podcast today. We have a lot of good golf to talk about. We're in the thick of the FedEx Cup. So there's, you know, the leaderboard has been shuffled around a little bit. We're going to redo our picks for the overall champ. We're going to take a look at a couple different format options that have, you know, come across the interweb over the last couple of days. So we're excited to kind of dive into that, see what we like, what we don't like, but we all agree on one thing. It's got to change. No one loves the way it's happening right now. And if as a true fan of just sports in general, I think it's a very archaic way of looking at a championship. And there's definitely better options. And a few were circulated today that we really enjoy. College football starting next week. NFL has got 2 weeks left before the kickoff for there. So we'll get a little bit into that. And then we're going to just basically talk about how good Glenn's golf game has become and why. We all want to know the secret because he has totally changed it around within a 3 week span. I feel like he was tinkering. And now he's back to good old Glenn. And we just want to know why. Inquiring minds want to know why, Glenn. So we'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, I sure hope Glenn's not on like the 2017 Houston Astros plan of succeeding.
You mean he cheats? Oh, no, that's a different Astros.
Look, people are asking, why. How did you get so good so fast? Is there someone banging on a trash can when the putts move left to right? Like, what's going on here?
It's actually when the competition's about to hit, that's when the trash can guy comes out. Guns are awesome. He shows up at every hole for everybody else's swing. So Glenn's gotten better, or we just all have inherently gotten really bad.
The field starts going backwards.
Yeah.
Scores calculated on a curve. That'd be the better I do.
So, Craig, you mentioned it, but everyone knows Tour Championship, preseason NFL, Jonathan Taylor potentially getting traded to the Dolphins. All of this is secondary. And if you'll indulge me for a moment, the 2023 national champions to be, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, start their season at 2:30 on Saturday in Dublin against the United States Naval Academy. I mean, Notre Dame sporting a legitimate, like, high quality, high volume passer at quarterback for the first time in years, with the deepest running back room in college football, Michigan eat your heart out, with legitimate talent at wide receiver, with potentially the best group of DBs in the country. This is, and playing a harder schedule than basically anyone. This team is going to be so good, and I cannot wait. And look, your little Wolverines can play their cute little Colorado States and Hawaii's and whoever else. And then eventually,
the powerhouse known as Navy. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, remind me when Michigan is going to Clemson and also playing Southern Cal. Like, Michigan's only hard game, which is hosting Ohio State, is something Notre Dame is also doing. Then Notre Dame's playing USC. Then Notre Dame's going to Clemson. So yeah, you can keep going with that. Notre Dame's also going to NC State and to Louisville and to Duke. All those teams won a bunch of games last year. So you can keep trying this thing. But if there's anything that this last round of conference realignment has shown us, it's that Notre Dame plays an actually hard schedule and everyone else is just trying to replicate it.
Look, I'll give you credit for one thing. Notre Dame's got a harder schedule than Michigan by far. But yep. In reality, they're light years below where Michigan is as far as a team this year. It does suck that Michigan's schedule is so weak because they're not going to get to show their true talent till the end of the year. And again, it's the second year in a row they've done this. Super frustrating. But at the end of the day, I would still take Michigan over Notre Dame 9.5 times out of 10. And the half time is really only due to maybe a hurricane, some fire or some natural disaster.
You remember the last time we saw Michigan on a football field, right? And they gave up 51 points to a team that went on to lose by 58. In that game, they had multiple turnovers at the goal line. They tried to run Philly special when they had, like, allegedly the best running back room in the country from, like, the 2-yard line. They turned the ball over a million times. They couldn't stop TCU if TCU were playing with their hands behind their back. That team went on to get destroyed in the worst bowl loss of all time. And you're telling me that Michigan, which brought back only some of the same guys and the most uninspiring quarterback in college football in JJ McCarthy, is somehow better than Notre Dame this year? Craig, you had a lot of bad takes about college football, and this is potentially the worst one.
During all of that discussion, where was Notre Dame?
Notre Dame was beating the crap out of Clemson.
Nowhere to be found. Without their starting quarterback, without, you know, a lot of their starters because they're getting drafted.
Who? Who was without their starting quarterback? Notre Dame, the team that played its backup all last year and still beat the crap out of a top five team?
No, Hooker wasn't playing.
Hendon Hooker plays for Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee. Sorry. You're right. Sorry. My bad. That's a great call.
You're just putting Hendon Hooker on a different team to delegitimize Notre Dame. This is the length you have to go to slander my program. This is ridiculous.
I don't hate Notre Dame. I just dislike them very much. And I don't think, I don't think they're a quality team. I don't think until they actually prove it, their best player, their tight end last year, is already drafted. So
they replaced him with Sam Hartman, who has thrown for 13,000 yards in college and 110 touchdowns.
No. You lost your tight end, I said.
Yeah, they have a new best player.
Yeah.
Isn't it better for the quarterback to be the best
player? I'm not worried about Notre Dame at all. I wouldn't worry. If we played Notre Dame 7 times this year, I wouldn't worry about them at all. The only team we worry about is Ohio State.
Hey, on September 23rd, Ohio State's going to come to Notre Dame. And when they leave as losers, you're going to have to change your tone on this.
You're going to have to get past USC first or Duke. I know thank God you threw that guy in.
Duke won 9 games last year. How many teams on Michigan's schedule won 9 games last year?
Stink.
How many? Craig?
If you were counting on Duke as being your big rivalry this year, go get them.
No. The big ones were Clemson, Ohio State, the only game on Michigan's schedule, and Southern Cal. 3 preseason top 10 teams. How many is Michigan playing?
Yeah, not many. I've already told you that their schedule is weak.
It's really easy to do. Look good against a weak schedule, just like they did last year. And then they gave up 51 points to the worst college football playoff participant of all time. Except maybe that Michigan State team.
Yeah. TCU is a really good team. How many people thought that TCU had a fighting chance going into that championship game last year?
Not many.
Those 4 people were pretty smart. But they got destroyed. Well, I don't know what you want me to tell you. They're still a better team. It's just until they beat them head-to-head, you're a second-level team.
I don't think this works how you think it works. Like, Notre Dame and Michigan have been to the same number of college football playoffs. They've had not really the same results, because Notre Dame has only ever lost to teams that went on to have blowout wins in the national championship. Meanwhile, Michigan just lost to a team that got historically blown out in the national championship. Notre Dame has never gotten to play a Big 12 team, the worst conference that ever makes the college football playoff. Like, I feel like you're grasping.
Notre Dame hasn't been worth watching. In all honesty, Notre Dame hasn't been worth watching in 15 years. Maybe.
Oh,
Notre Dame went like 44-7 from 2017 to 2021.
They haven't been worth watching
college football playoffs.
How many solid pros have come out of Notre Dame in the last 15 years?
Is this the line you want to go down? Because they have literally the best player at multiple positions in the NFL right now.
Let's go. Let's see it.
Quentin Nelson.
No. Used to be.
Name a better guard than Quentin Nelson right now. Do it. You can't.
Ben Bredesen.
No one knows who that is.
You should watch the Giants play. The guy's a stud.
Yeah. Not as good as Quentin Nelson. Zach Martin. You're going to take issue with Zach Martin?
Yeah. He hasn't signed yet. He's not playing. He's greedy. Everyone's throwing his name.
Wait, you said – what was the time period you said? Because I'm pretty sure Harrison Smith was made the highest-paid safety in all of football during that time period.
Look, Will, you're talking in circles. Until they do something productive, I don't want to hear it.
What's the productive thing? First of all, going back 15 years, you're going back to the end of the Charlie Weiss era, a time when they were less relevant than they are today.
Giving you the benefit of the doubt.
What is the relevant thing that Michigan has done in that time period? Michigan just beat Ohio State for the first time in like two decades, 2 years ago.
We're back, baby.
You are... Craig, I knew that your takes about college football were bad. I did not know they could be this bad. And we're going to have to move on to golf just so that we can preserve some working relationship here. Glenn.
We're back.
The Tour Championship.
Hold on. I know you guys are talking history, tradition, who's better.
Rutgers.
The week after Rutgers goes into Ann Arbor and beats Michigan, I've circled home game against Wagner. It's $1 Pizza Hut slice day. So there's a game for you, boys. That's what America's going to be watching. $1 slice day, and it's advertised on their schedule.
I did not know that Wagner College had
They don't. Well, just nod your head and smile.
Yeah, Rutgers needed a sacrificial lamb. They beat them last year like 55-20 or something in like week one. So Wagner's going to make a little extra cash. Rutgers gets a W. Everybody wins, and it's $1 slice day. All the fans win. No matter the team.
I was reminiscing about Big East era Rutgers football with a friend of mine the other day. That was some program. The first Greg Schiano era was actually a ton of fun.
They were checking out real deal. 2006, they went up to like number two, and then they got beat by Louisville, I think.
Yeah, the Brian Brohm Louisville team.
Yep, that was a bummer.
But yeah.
They had a chance, like I always said, if they could keep the New Jersey talent in the state, they could be competitive. It's just a matter of keeping them in state. I mean, but let's bring them in.
Now that those New Jersey kids are going to get to play, those rivals they grew up hating from UCLA and USC, the pitch will get so much easier.
This poor program. Hopefully she can turn it around like he did back in the early 2000s.
Fingers crossed. So college football has a bad playoff. We've discussed that in the past. It does a terrible job of putting good games on the field, because really there are never very often more than two teams who contend for the national championship. Another sport with a bad playoff is professional golf. It doesn't make sense. We've discussed it a million times. Normally, everyone tries to get into the playoffs, and then you start on even footing in the playoffs. On the PGA Tour, all the points that you've amassed during the year carry over for two events, and then in the third event, those points are sort of arbitrarily turned into strokes because a bunch of people sit at each number when you count down from 10 under par to even par. And then just like they play one stroke play tournament adjusted, and then whoever wins is the FedEx Cup champion. It doesn't make sense. We've discussed it a million times. Craig, you sent me a great video earlier of Dan Rappaport's proposed solution, which is a mix of stroke play and match play. It would keep match play on the PGA Tour. It would ensure that we get the matchups of the guys who have been the best players all year. It would be a pretty good way probably of making sure the best player is the FedEx Cup champion, and that there's not any of this like weird nonsense with, oh, a guy gets hot, but his strokes were adjusted, so he started from this far back, and now this guy who shot like even par wins, and like it's so weird. So talk me through, Craig, the way you'd want to see the FedEx Cup playoff organized. It has to be good for TV, and it has to be good for identifying the best player.
I mean, if you look at it, they really got to take the March Madness approach to this whole thing, in my opinion. And I think Dan Rappaport hit it right in the head. I don't know if this was his idea or he got it from someone else, but he did his little rant on it today, and I thought it was awesome. Use the point system to get yourself a bye, right? So whether it's the top three, top four, however you want to do it. And then from that point on, just create brackets with the points putting you in certain categories, and literally create a March Madness bracket where you are just, you know, doing match play, you know, until you get to the very end. It basically acts as 99% of the other sports that are really doing a true playoff, right? It's you've got to be good enough to get into it. But then from that point on, the cream rises to the crop where you're going to have to fight your way all the way through. And if you're the bottom of the heap, you're going to have to fight the best players, you know, to stay relevant. And if you're, you know, and if you're the top dogs, you get to get yourself a rest week and kind of watch, you know, get some more practice in from wherever the courses are, whatever it is. So you've earned that legacy or that right. But at the end of the day, you're still going to have to then play three or four more matches to get yourself to be the champion of the year. But it takes all the guessing out of it. It takes the whole idea of, oh my God, how do we catch Scheffler with, you know, starting at 10 under this week? It's just, it's so crazy that people think that this is the way to go without putting any real thought into it. So to me, let everyone play head to head. Everyone said that we were trying to figure out how to do more match play anyway, because it becomes so much fun. And if you're dealing with the top 30 players anyway, you know these matches are going to be great because every one of them is worth a ton of money. So they're fighting for their lives. Everyone gets a breakdown of the cash. I know that's what I'd like to see. And I think the ratings would be huge. I think you can mix it up with a couple of different courses. I think you can figure out, like, even if you had players relatively in the, you know, different proximity to play different courses, and, you know, so these eight are Northwest, these other eight are the Southeast or whatever it is, and then you start to bring them all together, pick one course for the championship match, and it's one-on-one, it would be an absolute blast to watch, you know? So I just think there's a lot of revenue to be made. I think it's more exciting for the players, and it'd be definitely more exciting for the fans all. And you get a ton of sponsorship for all these things. So
I love it. Glenn, how would you do it?
No, I'm with you. The whole knock of not having or getting rid of match play, like the PGA Championship used to be match play and the World Golf Championships match play. Was that the marquee players, the problem was for TV, the marquee players probably, you know, they rarely made it to the finals. So you lose them, they get knocked out early, no one's watching anymore. Doing it with the FedEx Cup takes care of that problem, because theoretically everybody who makes the FedEx Cup playoffs is a marquee player. So that's the best idea. I mean, what this year, it's, you know, it's they're doing the best of, with what they've got. But, you know, Scottie Scheffler's number one when Rahm had four wins and won the Masters, and Scottie had two wins. But he's loaded up on top tens. So, you know, and no one in the right mind saying Scottie Scheffler had a better year than John Rahm. But no, I like the match play idea. I think that's a really good idea. And I think they should take a serious look at that.
And if you're going through the 30 players that are left, there's really no dogs in any of this. I mean, there's a couple of players that are a little less popular than others, but for the most part, you know, you're going to get a great, great set of golf, which you can kind of string out now for another, I don't know, 2 weeks, because you can do 4 days at a certain spot, and then next week move closer until you finally get to the championship in one centralized location. So even if there's a bunch of underdogs that come up and play well, and there's still great names. I mean, who the last four? You got, you know, Straka, Spieth, Hatton, and you know, Grillo and Sam Burns. So again, Grillo is a little bit less of a name than the others as far as popularity goes, but I mean, that's tough to beat, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you get down to the 30 guys who have, some of them game the system, like, let's be honest, I think it was Sungjae did it last year where he just played in literally every event, but like, good. Like, if that's what the points are going to let you do, do it. But when you get to the 30 guys who have, you know, played the best, earned the most points, however you want to say it, there's no way that that's not going to be good players. And sure, are there a couple guys who nearly missed, you know, Matsuyama, Cam Young, Sahith Tagala, all kind of just had near misses. And would you like to see them in the top 30? Sure. But like, this is a strong field. And of course it is. It's the guys who have played the best on the best tour in the world all year. You can't mess it up. So to the point that, Glenn, you're making about, look, when you just have a normal PGA Tour event and there are 120 guys and it's match play, yeah, a bunch of random weird stuff can happen. When you just have these 30, maybe they'd make it 32 guys, maybe there would be, you know, buys or whatever, you're going to end up with a great field and some great matchups. Like, and just pick any guy you would want to watch play golf from this list. Is there any matchup that he could have that you wouldn't tune in for? Like, I would tune in to watch Jordan Spieth play anyone in this top 30. And that's the great thing about this, because every guy is going to be in multiple of those situations.
And imagine that last match, one-on-one, regardless of who it is, even if they're two no-names.
For $10 million.
$10 million on the line, that's, people are going to watch just for that, because you're going to want to see people break. You want to go to see people rise up to the, you know, the occasion, all that stuff. I mean, it's just, that's true sport right there.
And the great thing about that is, I don't know how much you guys ended up catching of the USAM final, but this year, any year, I will tune in to watch two guys I have never heard of and have no connection to play 36 holes of match play because of what's on the line. And of course, because those are the two guys that got to that level, the golf's going to be fantastic. But it's about stakes at that point. And it being match play would make me care about the stakes of the FedEx Cup so much more than this weird fake stroke play concept, like infinitely more.
Yeah, it's easy to do. Like, just do a cut, right? Go play Thursday, Friday, and then cut to the low 16 or whatever it is and play four matches, you know, two Saturday, two Sunday. And, you know, like I said, head-to-heads is awesome. You have a rooting interest in each and every match. You pick a favorite and you're rooting for that person, not like stroke play. You're just kind of like watching the whole field. I just think, yeah, I think it's kind of a no-brainer if they could figure this out. Like I said, everybody who plays golf plays match play just about on the weekend. You're out there with your buddies. So bring it to the tour. Bring it to the tour championship.
I mean, $10 million, 6-foot putt's going to feel like 15 feet. 15 feet gonna feel like, you know, 30. And just the net, the fairways are going to seem narrow. It almost doesn't feel that way when you're just playing. I don't know. I shouldn't say I've never done it before. But
if you don't routinely play for $10 million?
Yeah. But if these guys are playing in a regular match and there's a whole field of folks, I feel like for them it's just like every other weekend when it's just you versus one other person for 18 holes. I just think that's a different atmosphere, a different feeling, a different kind of nervousness that they don't experience all the time anymore. I don't know. I think it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, and they're playing for $18 million now in the FedEx Cup.
It is, isn't it?
And it's a true champ. I mean, like, at that point, you can say, yeah, I beat the whole field. You know, for the last 2 weeks, I beat the whole field from scratch. Even if you were number 30, great. I didn't get the bye week. I fought the best players and kind of worked on it. It's just, I don't know. This way, I just feel like we keep crowning a champ, but it's, you know, it's just not as exciting.
Talk about a great tune-up for the Ryder Cup, too.
Yeah, no doubt.
Gets you into, like, a different format. You're watching match play, there would be juice to it. Then a couple weeks later, you get the Ryder Cup. I think that would be pretty sweet.
Yep.
So on the topic of the Ryder Cup, Scottie Scheffler and Brian Harman both commented today when asked about Brooks Koepka is now seventh on the Ryder Cup points list by like the equivalent of, I think, $29,000 earned over the course of the year. And Harmon and Scheffler were both asked, hey, should he be on the team? And both of them said, you know, some version of it makes sense. Scottie Scheffler basically said, you know, look, Brooks Koepka would have had to play one tournament on the PGA Tour to make $29,000. Like, acting like now he has to be a captain's pick, kind of ridiculous. I still think there's a lot of kind of uncertainty at the bottom of that list for the US, but would either of you, if you were in Zach Johnson's shoes, be taking this as an opportunity to leave Brooks Koepka off the team? Because I have some pretty well-documented disdain for both Brooks Koepka and the LIV Golf product, and I personally can't imagine doing that.
Yeah, no way can you leave him off after the season he had in the majors. And look, if you leave him off and Zach takes that team and they lose, everything, look, you left off Brooks, you left off DJ, left off Bubba, Patrick Reed, Bryson. That's a lot of talent that you didn't even consider because of politics. And then if you go in and lose, that's, you know, God help him in the interviews after that.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like if he's not on now, it's just out of spite for whatever reason. Like, so if there's bad blood from something else, maybe. Other than that, you got to take him. It's just, if you really want to put the best team together, you got to put all the live crap aside. You got to put all the other personality stuff aside and really get the best players. Not necessarily the top players. If there's a captain's choice, there's really good reason to take someone that, hey, they're kind of a fringe, but they're awesome at match play. They're a great team, player, bubble, like whatever other, categories that you want to check off the box for. I think that's okay, but you can't just ignore somebody that is blatantly this good and playing this well and deserves to be on. So
yeah, I don't think you leave off a major champion. You know, somebody won a major in a Ryder Cup year. You can't leave that person off the team.
Yep.
So, yeah, completely agree. I think there are guys who have been playing on the LIV Tour this year who have not made extremely convincing cases to be included on this year's Ryder Cup team, and Brooks Koepka's he's not in that group. He has, unlike some other guys, maintained the form of when he truly goes against the best players in the world, he shows that he is still one of them. And Glenn, I think you're exactly right. For Zach Johnson to leave him off the team, go to Rome and lose, especially lose close, would be among the worst looks for any Ryder Cup captain that we've ever seen. So I don't think there's any danger of that, and I think that's the right choice. Brendan Quinn posted an interesting article in The Athletic today reflecting on the way that Major League Baseball, who of course shows up on the t-shirt or the golf shirts of a couple of PGA Tour pros, has changed its rules in the last year to encourage more of the type of action that they perceive fans as wanting to see. Now, has all of it worked? You know, maybe some, maybe not others, but Brendan Quinn wrote an interesting article in which he talked to a number of players, Chris Kirk, Cam Young, Max Homa are all in there, about the different things maybe the PGA Tour could do to make the game of golf more interesting to the spectator. And I think questions like this are always interesting because a lot of us who are watching golf week in and week out anyway are probably like happy enough with the product that it makes us a little bit skeptical of proposed changes. But there's a part of the article that I really enjoyed in which, after advocating for the PGA Tour to kind of try some stuff out, the main thing that he talks about is a shot clock. But after advocating for the PGA Tour to try some stuff out on the Korn Ferry Tour, he gets into the following selection, which I want to get your guys' reaction to. He says, so why not put them on the clock? Why not force faster play on the greens? What data might be revealed? Why not seek course setup changes, more graduated rough, more variety in tee boxes, more short par fours? There are ways to combat distance that don't require equipment changes. You could, in fact, shorten the course and create different results. Why not allow range finders? why not add in more internal out of bounds? If we're to believe that these players are athletes in an arena, let's treat them as such. Eliminate relief from temporary immovable obstructions. You hit it in a grandstand, you take a stroke penalty and a drop. Why not broaden the roster of courses people want to see? Whistling Straits, Erin Hills, go play the Tour Championship at Shinnecock. Why not? Want to get radical? Let's see the data if you make the hole smaller. So I think there's kind of a spectrum there of like, hey, I'd like to see that to Brendan, please relax. But Glenn, what's your reaction? First of all, does the PGA Tour need to think about changes to the game to become a better spectator product? And if it does, what types of changes would you be looking for?
Well, they should. I think they could get a lot of interest if they change it to 54 holes and do a shotgun start and have me.
And maybe play with teams.
Yeah, have some teams with some funky names and some weirdness to it, you know. There's like that list I went from like, that's good. Yeah, I agree with that. That's dumb. That's really weird. Okay, yeah. Whatever. But no, I mean, there's only so much you can do with golf, right? To you know, even speeding it up. I don't know, like baseball, you speed it up because there's only one pitch being thrown at a time. Golf, there's you know, at any time, 70 players on the course. So there's theoretically 70 shots being hit. So you have your choice. So it's more of a TV decision to show more shots, which could make it more exciting. I the shot clock, I get it, doesn't really change. It's not like baseball is a dramatic change, but the only thing I can suggest is the fans want to be inside the ropes, so mic up the players, put them on a 7-second delay and mic them up, so because people like to hear those conversations.
And they did that on a couple broadcasts and more regularly than they ever have before this year, and I thought they did it really well. And the key to it, at least in my opinion, was they were talking to the guys about the process of playing golf professionally. Like, they were talking to them, how are you approaching this hole? You know, why are you making that decision off the tee? How are you assessing where you set yourself up? Like, it is possible to put these guys in situations where they can be good on TV without having to be like, you know, the Brad Faxons of the world who end up in the booth. And I think that was a great finding from this season.
Yeah, and it's different. Like, a lot of people complain the European Tour, you know, interviewing players on the course. You know, this isn't as intrusive. It's just having a microphone on them, on the caddies, and then let's hear their conversation. Like I always say, when you see two players, a caddy and a player discussing a shot, and then you have an announcer talking over them going, I think they're going to do this. Like, I don't want to hear what this announcer thinks. I can actually hear what they're thinking about doing and what they're going to do. So just cut the mics off in the tower and amp up the players.
It's funny. I feel like that list that they came up with enhanced or a lot of things that would help maybe the golfers, but not necessarily make it more favorable for the viewers. Like, why do I care if they have rangefinders? That's not going to make it more fun for me to watch. Like,
I think it would speed things up.
Yeah, I don't think speed is an issue. I was joking the other day with somebody. I was like, man, the TV coverage has golf down to an exact science for, unless there's a delay for weather, they can almost to the second figure out exactly when they're going off the air. And they're, you know, if they're a little bit early, great, they get to watch the award ceremony. But most of the time, it finishes right around the right time. They get a last set of commercials and they go to the next thing. For us as viewers, it's no different than, you know, anything else. We don't notice the fact that they're waiting on the tee box for, you know, 20 minutes, whatever, because they cut to another, you know, another group. So all those things that you were talking about, I think 80% of them just would probably make the golfers, you know, enhance their game maybe as far as shot clocks and rangefinders and, you know, short par fours and everything else. I don't know what a lot of that does for the spectator. Some of it could create interesting shots. I do like the idea of different courses.
Yeah,
I think there's so much good golf out there, and so many different options. It would be really fun to see them play a wider variety of courses. And you should almost make it so you can't play the same course twice, even if you have the same sponsorship and everything else. Go do your work and go find another course out there to host that same event. Right, easier said than done for some of them, because it's tradition, but I don't know. that's really the only thing on that list that was, I think, made a lot of sense to the viewer.
Yeah, that's the one that I like the most, I think. Although some of the course setup things to respond to distance, I think if they're done well, could be good. But yeah, I think, you know, I understand that not all of the players like all of the places where majors are played, and I am talking about Chambers Bay, but there are interesting golf courses that we see like once every 15 years. And I understand that there's a different dynamic when they are exclusive private clubs and there's membership to appease and it's a big undertaking, that it's a different thing. But Whistling Straits, Erin Hills, Chambers Bay, Harding Park, these massive public golf courses that probably want to be shown off for the golf enjoying public, but also are just cool places to see golf, they should be on display more. And I think it's kind of tough when, all right, we're going to have the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow, and then we're also going to have a major at Quail Hollow, and we're going to have whichever tournament that is that they play at Torrey Pines, and then we're also going to have a major at Torrey Pines, and we're going to have the AT&T Pebble Beach, and then we're also going to have a major at Pebble Beach. It's like, look, we understand these are great golf courses. You can spread the wealth a little bit, though. And I think that, as far as things that would be interesting for the viewers, very much at the top of my list.
Yeah, I don't even think you have to go to the Great Court. I would love to see it at a real Muni, and
hell
not,
yeah,
and not have the USGA come in 2 years before and teach them how to grow grass. Let's have it at Flanders Valley in New Jersey on a, you know, on a week, and you know, play the conditions that everyone plays when they go there, and see how these guys do.
This has legs. I would love that so much, because look, at the end of the day, certain professional athletes and golfers are kind of high on the list are divas. Mm-hmm. They just are. Everything has to be perfect. Nobody better be taking a picture in my backswing. You know, every blade of grass must be exactly to my liking, or I'm going to ask for relief. You want to talk about things that make professional golf and the kind of golf that people like us play different? Like, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
So Glenn, I don't know what we'd have to do to convince the player run organization, the PGA Tour, that that's what they ought to be doing. But yeah, man, would I love to see that.
Yeah, there's no ground under repair for hard pan and cart damage. Yep. We get to play it off. You know, I say to Craig, hey, I'm going to take a drop off of this stuff. He's like, the hell you are? Are you playing it? Yeah. As I'm like, it's clearly dirt, clearly tire damage, but nope, play it. No ground under repair. Play it out of the divots.
Yep.
Can you imagine Will's rant the next day? Will hates the live courses so much. Imagine if they
put no
courses after that.
No, different thing. Completely different thing. Because, and this goes for literally everything that Liv does. The courses that Liv plays are a microcosm of this same issue. Liv's whole thing is, and this is the issue with Liv, it's the issue with the Alliance of American Football, it's the issue with the XFL, it's the issue with all of these competitor leagues, is they show up and they go, hey, care about this thing, but there's no basis for me to care about it. I don't have, so you can tell me, oh, you know, this place in South Africa where they're having this live event is the most amazing golf course. Well, I don't really care about the players very much. I think the format sucks. This place doesn't have any history. Put all those things together, why am I going to care about it? When I think that it would be a hilarious and great idea to make PGA Tour players, or you know what, even if Liv did this, I would like it better, to make PGA Tour players play just like the kind of golf course that I can go play, just to watch them complain about it primarily, that would be awesome. The thing that Liv guys would never do, because they'd be like cast away from the tour if they did, is go to a place like that and then go, man, that sucked. I like playing way better courses than that. But the PGA Tour guys would do that because it's what they do every single time they play a course they don't like.
So you're basically creating the real world of golf. Real world, like the TV show. Like,
exactly.
Put these folks in an environment that's going to make them uncomfortable. Put a mic on them and see how they all react. Yeah. The true reality.
That's exactly right.
Yep, I love it.
And they all have to eat a Fiesta dog at the turn and see if they can make it through the back nine without having to run into the bathroom.
And they get a stroke deducted for every John Daly they drink on the court.
Oh, that's another. They should be forced to have a drink or two at the turn.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a penalty if they don't.
Juice. They have to call it swing juice or swing oil. Either one.
Totally acceptable.
No, Michael Jordan can sponsor that. It can be the MJ secret stuff from Space Jam, but it's John Daly's.
I like it.
This is a great idea. We just solve golf. Glenn, speaking of solving golf, I hear your game is in just phenomenal shape.
I'm hitting the ball well. We went to, I shot 73 at Rock Rimmon.
Love that.
And then went back to back 77, 78, but I didn't make a birdie either day again.
You sicko.
Only because up here in the Northeast, we went from having 90 degree weather, so the greenskeepers were keeping the greens long, to just having just deluges of rain every night, so the greenkeepers are keeping the greens long. So the greens have been really shaggy and bumpy that I've been playing. But no, hitting it well, you know, I just started doing what I tell everyone else to do. I say, swing, don't turn through the ball. You hit the ball. You don't hit the ball. You hit your swing. You contact the ball 2/3 of the way through your swing. 1/3's up here to the top. The other third, you're hitting the ball. And in the last third, you're following through. And as long as you follow through and turn and let it go, and you don't try to steer, you don't try to hit at it, just turn and let it go. All of a sudden, now the ball's going straight and far. It's a dumb game.
Isn't it the worst?
You can go but let me say this. Glenn is a lot more fun to be around when he's playing good golf. Bad golf, Glenn, is no bueno.
Yeah.
Dog, friends, his family, like, there's good playing golf, Glenn, is a blast.
I was playing with Dawn and her friend Maggie at Rock Rimmon, and someone, one of our buddies, Ryan, came up and he asked Dawn, how's he doing? And Dawn's like, he's playing good. Don't come near him.
That's awesome. Craig, does that mean Glenn's been carrying you or what?
Oh, Glenn and I actually haven't played in quite a while. We played the one day member guest at Wingfoot, but we didn't even, right, Glenn? We got rained out.
Yeah, we got 14 holes in and then it just down.
Yeah, we were playing pretty well. Both of us played, you know, pretty good. I think we were lower middle of the pack, but it was a. But that's it. Like Glenn and I haven't had a chance to play too much. I'm now coaching again, coaching football again. So I'm trying to sneak in golf when I can, and it's been a little bit more of a struggle. But I'm pretty confident that Glenn would beat me right now pretty easily.
Who's your closest comp as a football coach?
Me?
Yeah.
There isn't any. Let's be serious.
Oh, sure there is. You're wearing like weird pleated khakis and saying stuff like chicken is a nervous bird and you're telling me there's not a comp for you. You're Jim Harbaugh. We all know you're Jim Harbaugh.
No,
you have the super short bike shorts that the coaches wear, the super short, super tight.
Oh, yeah.
The new ones aren't in for the season yet. We do have them on back order, but they will be worn in full effect starting next. No, I'd like to think if I could be any coach in football right now, I'd probably be a lot like Vrabel, where more defensive minded than offensive minded. Don't have the quite body shape that I had when I played, but probably pretty loud and obnoxious. But he'd probably be, if I could be any coach right now, I think he's a stud. He's fun to watch. I think he's very relatable to the players. So that's what I'd like to be like.
I would have guessed Woody Hayes.
I'm not even as good as Sugar Hayes.
It's only a matter of time before you punch an opposing player.
Grab him by the face mask and wrap him around, like give him a little business down there.
Who's the one that tripped the guy going down the sidelines and about to score.
Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a little bit of Mike Tomlin because, I don't know, I see one of these little dudes running down, you know, about to score. I may, by accident, stick my leg out or go look at the ref back turn.
Or Tomlin at least tried to do it and effectively ran into the guy's path enough. I think it was Sal Alossi from the Jets who later became like the UConn football strength coach in the dark years who actually succeeded at getting his leg out there.
Fast move.
Shout out Sal Alossi.
Yeah.
Shout out Jim Mora. UConn starts the season a week from tomorrow with NC State. That's not going to go well, but it's okay.
Every year, they're rebuilding. Every year.
No. This year is... Last year, the build happened. This year, they can peak. I'm confident. They're playing a harder schedule than Michigan. Michigan, who starts off... I don't want to let them get away with last year having played UConn, Hawaii, and Colorado State, because it's actually worse this year. East Carolina, not a state.
Super good.
UNLV, Bowling Green, also not a state.
So you've never heard of the Running Rebels?
I've heard of the basketball team.
Yeah, they run really fast. They're constantly passing. They score really quick. The same concept they have in football as they do in basketball.
Craig, if you had to guess, when is Michigan's first away game?
Week 4.
And what date is that?
I don't even know if they have a bye. I haven't even looked at their schedule yet this year. I glanced through it, to be honest. I just saw that it's the same crap as last year and didn't pay much attention.
Yeah, Michigan doesn't play on the road until September 30th.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, look, we'll have played
games in multiple countries by that point.
That's your fault. Don't blame Michigan for that. Just because Notre Dame's going out of the country.
Too late. Ridiculous. And their crossover games are like Minnesota and Nebraska. Like, those aren't real football teams.
This is cold weather. Come on, grow up.
They're playing them on September 30th and October 7th.
It gets cold in Nebraska.
And isn't Minnesota playing inside now, or are they still at their weird outside stadium?
I don't know.
All right, Rutgers has a harder schedule than Michigan this year.
Rutgers has a harder schedule than Michigan. Rutgers is actually a school with integrity that cares about building a schedule.
And none of our players in jail yet.
None of the players in jail yet. We are this is like one of those days since last incident, but it's just players in jail and it's
days since last player arrested. I think we're on like 14 or something like that. So we're good.
14 days?
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody's been arrested this year. I should just Google Rutgers football players arrested.
Yeah, Rutgers is at least playing Wisconsin and Iowa, They're playing Virginia Tech out of conference. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Michigan's gone down this route. You would think after last year, to be honest, that they would look at their schedule and be like, yeah, that was pretty embarrassing. You can't do that again.
Guess not.
No, guess not. I mean, it worked. It got them to the playoffs. So.
And then what happened?
They made it to the playoffs.
And then what happened?
They made it to the playoffs. They made it farther than Notre Dame.
How many points did they give up?
A lot. But who didn't? Hey, it's the playoffs.
What do you mean, who didn't?
I'll tell you who didn't give up a lot of points in the playoffs. Notre Dame.
That's right. Michigan gave up more points by, I think, 20 than Notre Dame has ever given up in a playoff game.
When's the last time Notre Dame was in a playoff game?
2020?
Yeah. COVID year. Nobody played. Everybody was sick.
They went undefeated. They beat number one Clemson. Like, what are Michigan like canceled their season that year because of how bad they were.
They're worried about the people around them. Notre Dame obviously doesn't care about anybody.
Yeah, that must be what it is.
Sorry, we have hearts.
COVID year, more like coward year. That's what it was. They canceled the Ohio State game because they were going to lose 90-3.
That's not true. Everybody had a cold.
This is amazing what I'm seeing here. And this is just a program you chose to like. Like, you don't have any connection to the University of Michigan. You're just like, oh, these guys might be good. At like, what, in 1997? Congratulations.
Look, I'm a true fan. I don't change my colors. Well, that's not true, actually. I really do
change. You change your, you had like five favorite teams last year.
Besides that.
You told us how badly you personally wanted to attend the University of Alabama.
Yeah, and I think Jack does too.
It's going to be okay.
I think it's going to be great.
Good. I love it.
I wouldn't even go to Michigan if I was, you know, had a chance, if I was just graduating high school. It's too cold. But, Will, if it makes you upset, I will always be a Michigan fan.
Yeah, and you're just
always. And you know what I'll never be? A Notre Dame fan.
Yeah, and you know what that shows? Bad judgment.
Well, you could say that about a lot of things in my life.
And I probably will.
Yeah, we could document it if you want. It's not going to help the argument at all. Notre Dame is still irrelevant. Until they do something, they are irrelevant.
But Craig, here's the thing that you're not getting. Is Michigan relevant?
Sure.
What is the thing that Michigan has done that Notre Dame has not done in the 15-year time frame that you love talking about? Because I happen to remember Notre Dame playing in a national championship game and two playoffs in that time, which is one more national championship game than Michigan was in that period.
We've beaten Ohio State twice. When's the last time you beat Ohio State?
I mean, Notre Dame has only played Ohio State once in that time. They've beaten Clemson twice in that time. When was the last time Michigan beat Clemson?
Don't throw stats at me, bro.
When was the last time Michigan beat Oklahoma? When was the last time Michigan beat Florida State? When was the last time Michigan beat Miami?
Get into semantics.
When was the last time Michigan beat Texas? Didn't think so. When was the last time Michigan beat Michigan?
Look, what's the last time Michigan beat Michigan?
Yeah, Notre Dame's done it like four times in the last like six meetings. So I don't see Michigan doing that. You're talking about what a great program they are. Maybe they should be able to beat
crazy
Michigan.
Person right now, absolute crazy person. It's so bad. Let's just talk at the end of the season.
When was the last time Michigan beat USC?
I'm going to have nothing to say until, you know, week eight anyway. So until then.
Why? Because they're playing high schools until then?
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, Notre Dame beat Ohio State 7-2 in 1936. That was the last time Notre Dame beat Ohio State.
Damn right.
Defensive battle, baby.
Big win.
Damn right.
Well, I wish you and your Notre Dame buddies the best.
Doesn't feel like that's true.
I think you're going to have a spectacular year. I really hope the best for you guys.
I just hope that Notre Dame ends up playing Michigan because, that would be amazing.
I don't know if my mic can be picked up by Will right now, but I don't hope Notre Dame does well.
Yeah, didn't think so.
By the way, Rutgers is 7 months since their last arrest, January 3rd.
So much more than 14 days.
I got to update that day since last arrest.
I'll get that on the screen for us. We'll have a running counter. Craig, for anyone who still has faith in you as a person after hearing your absolutely ridiculous takes on the state of college football, tell them what they should know about our upcoming One Club Short events.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, we are going to have a blast at Woodhome. The event is on September 11th. Go to oneclubshort.com and register. The format is changing. Like we said before, we've had great success with this new format. So we're doing best ball out of the foursome. So you get 75% of your handicap. Everyone plays their own ball. We'll take the best ball out of that foursome. We don't want to go to the scramble route because we really want you all to play tee to green for this club. If you're going to get a chance to play these courses, you got to experience the whole thing. So, but it takes the pressure off of everybody in the group having to be an absolute stick. You do get your handicaps. We have net and gross winners, but go to oneclubshort.com and register today. We've got a few spots open. Again, we are just happy to be coming to a new territory for us. So sign up today. Looking forward to seeing y'all.
Glenn, any parting shots from you before we wrap this up?
Well, I'm gonna make, you know, I don't know if it's gonna make you happy or Craig mad, but I'm rooting for Notre Dame this week. I am a Subway alumni for the Fighting Irish, so
Irish.
No Irish.
It's August 23rd. The Irish are undefeated. And OneClubShort.com for any membership, registration, dates, courses, tournament info. For people in the Baltimore area who know the course, they are amped up about Woodholme. Like, people who know golf and play golf down here are psyched that this is where we're going. So if you're on the fence, let that be a lesson to you. This is someplace you're going to want to play. You can keep up with us, as I said, oneclubshort.com. We're also on Instagram. We're at oneclubshort, and Twitter, we're at oneclubshort. And then the number one, I'm sure Jordan Spieth or Tom Kim are doing anything in the Tour Championship. I'll be having a very public crisis on there. So follow us. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, with the added bonus of video if you are listening on Spotify. And the whole video podcast goes up on YouTube, where we are One Club Short Pod. We'll be back probably same time, same place next week. Recap the Tour Championship, get you ready for the Ryder Cup and the event at Woodholme. And until then, thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks, everybody.